Welcome to the August 21st, 2013 Finance Administration and Operations Committee meeting. Will the secretary please call the roll?
Chair Wolf.
Here.
Director Peterson.
Here.
Director Darcy.
Here.
Director Gonzalez.
Here.
Chair, we have a quorum.
Thank you. Any public comment today? No? Dr. Stavros. Number four, we have approval of the minutes of the Finance Administration and Operations Committee meeting held on June 19th and July, that should be July 17th. Meeting was on, I believe. Minutes. On July 17th.
I think that's right.
Is that right? Is there any problem with approving if that date's off or not really?
No problem. We'll note the correction when we make the motion that way.
Any comments? Any corrections? Okay, is there being none? Do I have a motion to approve?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Five, Executive Director.
Thank you. I don't really have much except to introduce Mike, I think. So we're going to be hearing from Mike Kelch today. He's going to be presenting our second quarter financial report. I know you're used to seeing this at this point every quarter. We kind of true up to get a sense of where we are on our spending plan and budget. And without giving too much of his presentation away, which I'm very good at doing, I think it's safe to say that we are pleased to report higher than we expected revenues, largely because of commercial traffic, which continues to be strong for us, and I think hopefully is a good indication of the economy coming back. And we're also pleased to report that our operating costs are $6 million below estimates, and we will be thinking about that and factoring that in as we do next year's budgeting, because we do have, I think, some opportunities to see some longer-term, hopefully, operating cost savings. So I think Mike is going to talk in greater detail also about our capital program, Mike and maybe Kathy Williams. Right. So without further ado, Mike, thank you. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
Is this mic working okay?
Yes.
It's going to topple over. As Christy mentioned, the second quarter results were generally positive, both in the area of revenues and operating expenditures. As you can see from the highlights here, total revenue totaled $241.5 million. That was above our estimate, primarily, as Christy mentioned, because of commercial vehicle traffic performing a little better than we had projected, and in fact growing about 2.6% over the same period of 2012. Passenger cars were on track, actually just slightly under our estimate, but generally on track with what we had projected for the second quarter. So the positive variance in revenue really is related to the commercial vehicle activity. Evasion recovery, totaled $12.3 million. That was also a positive number relative to what we had projected for the second quarter. About $1.6 million greater than we had projected. With respect to the operating budget, as mentioned, $6.6 million below budget. There are some areas that we want to talk a little bit more about, because some of that variance is really related to timing and other one-time type issues that we should consider going forward. The capital program spending was below budget in the second quarter. We have had some weather delays. We've also had some positive news with respect to some aggressive bids on the projects. And we've received some intergovernmental agreement reimbursements that we never budgeted. So that helped increase that positive variance with respect to spending being below what we projected. And we will talk more about that as we go into the capital section. A reminder, our sources of revenue, no surprise, primarily toll revenue and evasion recovery. A total of $986 million was what we budgeted for the year. Maintenance and operations budget was $283 million. Debt service transfers estimated to be $317 million. And deposits or funds that were available for our capital program from our current revenue totaled $386
million. For the second quarter, numbers we mentioned in the highlights, you can see the breakout here, slightly down, very slightly down in miscellaneous and investment income, up in concessions and toll revenue and evasion recovery. With respect to the detail for maintenance and operations, operating costs were less than budget, primarily due to vacancies, reduced expenditures in contractual services, materials, operating supplies, as well as equipment, office rental, and maintenance. The payroll and related costs variance of $2.6 million, being $2.6 million under budget, is primarily a function of having more vacant positions currently than what we had programmed into the second quarter. Contractual services was $2.3 million below budget. That's primarily a timing issue. We had a number of contracts that we previously had funded out of the capital program, I think if you recall from our budget presentation, that we thought were more appropriate to switch to operating, and some of those contracts, pavement inspection, underwater bridge inspection, and so forth, have now just started. So we're going to see a catch-up in those expenses in the second half of the year. Materials and operating supplies, this is really primarily due to the fact we had a mild winter and we're under budget with respect to the need for the use of winter materials in the first half of the year, and the fact that we haven't purchased winter materials yet for this coming winter season. We do expect that number to diminish somewhat, but we'll likely have a positive variance by the end of the year as well, unless we have a really difficult start to the winter season. And finally, equipment, office rental, and maintenance, positive variance of $735,000. This expense is down primarily because we are looking to switch to a new vendor for our electronic toll collection. We had programmed some money into software maintenance and development for the existing system. Business Systems has reevaluated the need for some of that, given that we are transitioning to a new system and are just spending less on that effort. And then I'd like to turn it over to Kathy to speak to the capital program.
Thank you. Good morning. Total spending for the capital program for the second quarter, as Mike mentioned, is down $97.4 million. Spending for Move Illinois and CRP is down $83.9 million. And then when you add to that spending for non-roadway capital, which was down $4.2 million, total spending for the capital program is down $88.2 million. Again, add to that intergovernmental reimbursements that we receive, which we don't budget for, of $9.1 million. Our total spending for the capital program is down $97.4 million. Most of this variance can be attributed to project cost savings for eastbound contract work on I-90, as well as scheduling changes as a result of for construction work on I-90 and in system-wide. This is a result of some weather impacts. But we still believe that this construction work should continue. We should be able to complete this construction work during the construction season. Most of the scheduling changes accounted for about $63.4 million, and project cost savings accounted for about $17.4 million for the second quarter.
I have a question for Kathy before I sit down.
Sure.
On the cost savings side, what do you attribute the cost savings to? Just bids coming in under?
Bids coming in under.
Just bids coming in under the engineer's estimates? How do you get to that number?
That's correct. It's what we budgeted in terms of what we
had for the cost of the particular project versus what we actually spent on the particular project, or dollars that have been spent on a particular project. If it's below, it's usually because of the cost coming in below what was originally estimated on the budget.
And I have a question too. If you, because of the weather delays, if we're trying to cram more work into a shorter period of time, do we end up having to pay more for overtime?
I think, and Paul will probably speak better, I think we're finding that in some cases we've been able to complete the work within the contract dollar amount. That's correct.
And we're, well, each one of the projects we evaluate on an individual basis, and we will take some actions. And those actions will be a combination of trying to give them some extra time to do the work, which is really a no-cost contract extension, and then also trying to buy back some additional time by paying for premium time to have them work on the weekends and other off-shift hours that weren't included in the original bids. We feel we're going to be able to manage these schedule recovery efforts within the established budgets for these projects. We always budget at least 5% over the award amount. Traditionally, this isn't really anything new either. We had many instances within our congestion relief program, the past capital program, where we did take these actions. I think the important thing is to note that I feel very strongly that trying to keep the projects moving and on schedule and taking actions to mitigate those risks are always more cost effective for the agency rather than pushing everything off where, you know, now I have to, we have to pay for winterization of the projects, we have to pay for remobilization in the following year. It pushes all the other work that might be following that work off further. It gets to be totally unmanageable if we do that. And it will, I think you'll see, Christy, were you going to say something?
I was just going to say that I think we have some change orders, do we not, on this agenda, and we can discuss it, but it is really those types of acceleration costs to make sure that we can keep things on schedule, right?
Yeah. And the underspending on the capital is something that we're focused on. We're trying to push the jobs as much as we can. We're trying to get our work going as quick as we can. We expect that now that all the rebuilding and widening jobs on I-90 that are currently in progress, they're now in the paving portion of their work. So they've got the subgrade taken care of, or they're getting it taken care of, and it's all ready to go for the big paving operation. And most of the money is spent in the pavement itself. So we're hoping to see, you know, a pretty healthy recovery on some of those capital underspending in the second quarter and this next quarter coming up.
When you say you budget 5%, you budget 5% more than what's higher than the engineer's estimate, or what's budgeted?
Our policy is when we bring it to the board, we ask the board to approve the award amount, and we add 5% to that.
On top of that?
On top of the award amount.
Okay.
So this budget includes the 5%?
Yeah,
this budget, it does include the 5%.
Okay.
And we've, you know, throughout all of CRP and Illinois, we were, when you consider all the changes, both plus and minus to each individual contract, we're well under 1%.
And that is part of the reason why you'll see positive variances relative to the budget, is because they've been able to keep change orders to such a low amount.
And I think part of this too, Paul, and I know you were given the direction to get things going quickly when we got the Move Illinois program approved. So sometimes, you know, as you're trying to be aggressive and get work out and capture these, what we always anticipated would be very good pricing, particularly in the first couple of years of the program, you know, we were very aggressive in our scheduling, right?
We have been. I mean, we're not, we knew in the Move Illinois program that we had dates in there, and we're fully committed to meeting those dates. And
right.
It's taken a lot of efforts within the personnel within this building to make that happen, and it's taken a lot of efforts with people in the engineering consultant world and also the contractors to make this happen. But everyone is committed to doing this. And they don't hear anything differently from us. We tell them, get it done, keep pushing.
I thought Director
Gonzalez
was waving his face. I had one other question about this. Do you, maybe there's no way of knowing this, do you anticipate that for the major contractors and others that you're working with, since the rain delay obviously covers the whole region, that they're going to feel this intensive pressure at the end because all the projects that they're working on may have experienced the same delay and everybody also wants them to do this intense work at the end, or do they just deal with that and hire new people? Or
they
are going to feel intensive pressure.
Okay. From the tollway, at least.
We're feeling it, they're feeling it. But like I said, I'm not seeing anything, like, for the first time. I'm not seeing anything, you know, totally unusual to us. I think that those contracts, they're all individual. All the contracts are separate. You know, they all were in different stages. They all received different notice of proceed dates. They all are proceeding with their work in their own way. So the delays vary. All of them are experiencing some delays. In some contracts, it's not that great. Might be 10 days or less. In others, it's up to 30 days. We still feel that those days are manageable. And like I said, we're taking an approach where we're trying to work with them. Look at resequencing of the work, you know, to recover days, give them additional flexibility on working some extra shifts, you know, and paying them for that to recover some days. We had contract completion dates that I believe were in mid to late October, which is ideal because usually at the end we're doing striping, and that requires some temperature cooperation in order to make sure you're putting it down and it's actually going to stay down. But you know, we have worked into November before. That's not unusual. We don't like to do that because you run the risk of running into a snowstorm, an early snowstorm, but we are taking all those measures to mitigate this risk and keep these guys on schedule and keep them going.
Thank you. Thank you.
So with respect to some of the year-to-date results, total revenue was $7 million greater than budgeted during the first 6 months of the year. Again, you can see that's almost entirely total revenue and invasion recovery. Actually, it's $7.4 million for total revenue and invasion recovery, and about $500,000 less than we had projected during the first 6 months for miscellaneous revenue. Which is difficult to time because it's not as uniform as the other revenue projections. A couple of things that I want to point out with respect to maintenance and operations budget. During the first 6 months, we were $10 million under a budget during the first 6 months of the year, but there are a number of issues that we need to, that we will be watching and monitoring, not wanting to leave with everything on a positive note. I'll point out some of the issues that we need to monitor during the second half of the year. The first is contractual services shows a positive variance of $5.4 million. As I mentioned earlier, some of the engineering related contracts that were switched from capital are now just starting to spend. And we had expected that to start earlier in the year, at least finance did. So we're going to see a diminishment of that positive variance by the end of the fiscal year. Again, materials, operating materials, or winter materials, it's really going to be a function of how early the winter starts and what stock we need to restock our inventory for winter materials. With respect to all other insurance, currently all other insurance shows a positive variance of underspending of $356,000. One of the items that we have on the agenda this morning in finance is an actuarial review of our self-insured workers' compensation insurance fund. Typically, we do see the actuary make a recommendation either to increase reserves for the prior year or to decrease reserves for the prior year. It's not atypical for us to have that kind of actuarial review. Last year, it was a positive piece of news from the actuary in that they reduced the recommendation for reserves for prior years by $2.9 million, This year, they're recommending an increase in the reserves of $2.6 million. So that $2.6 million, we will need to accommodate within that $10 million positive variance by the end of the year. And finally, in utilities, you can see I mentioned that in the second quarter. Utilities, we are actually over budget by about $726,000 through the first half of the year. About half of that relates to billing credits we've been working on with the Department of Central Management Services. We believe, and they agree, that we've been overcharged for some of the international calls, primarily Canada. And so we're working through that number. However, we do have some increased expense in telecommunications and that we will have to accommodate within the budget. And also there's some slight overage in electric, but we believe that we will be able to accommodate that cost within budget for the second half of the year. So
the over budget there, that $700,726 is attributed more to telephones?
It is attributed more to telephone.
What's Canada yet?
The calls that we get from on our hotline, our 800 number, not hotline, our 800 number.
So they're incoming calls.
They're incoming.
So we get charged those incoming calls?
Yeah, yes.
And why Canadians are calling us?
Because we have an increased effort to collect violations from Canada.
Okay.
And finally, I think we've covered most of the issues related to the capital program. The capital program spending, as we mentioned, has been less than projected during the first half of the year, about $141 million through the first 6 months in the Move Illinois and CRP program. And then about a $4 million variance in other capital projects, and then we've received reimbursements of about $9 million through intergovernmental agreements that we had not budgeted. Okay, any questions?
Mike, just on the telephone settling through CMS, it's not a lot of money in the scheme of things, the budget, but do you anticipate that that will all be worked out before the end of the fiscal year? So it's not going to be something that's going to be a problem in the next fiscal year?
We would hope within 3 or 4 weeks to have that issue resolved.
Yeah.
We would hope. I'm confident it will be done before the end of the year. I'm hoping the next time we stand up for a quarterly review, we can say it's been resolved.
Good.
With our aggressive efforts, the evasion recovery, it was up $1.6 million, the most estimated. Do you anticipate that for each quarter going forward for the remainder of this fiscal year?
I think that we saw more of that in the first quarter, so I think we'll see positive numbers, but probably not quite as great as what we've seen through the first half of the year.
Any questions? Anybody? Thank you. Okay. Staying with finance, and you alluded to that, the approval of funding of the Workers' Comp Insurance Claim Reserve Fund that the actuaries did a review of. So you want to tell us about that?
Sure. This item is funding of the Workers' Compensation Claim Reserve Fund. The tollway does, pursuant to tollway's bond indenture, maintain a Workers' Compensation Insurance Program. Always decided to self-insure that fund. It's been that way since, I think, the late 1980s. The Pinnacle Actuarial Resources has conducted this year's study to review the adequacy of those reserves for all prior year claims. They've recommended a claim, an increase in reserves for open claims, meaning all of the years that all of the claim years prior to April 30th of 2013, they've recommended an increase of $2,603,328 for that period.
How many open claims do we have at that point?
We have about 200 claims per year, and John, do you know what number? About 200 open claims?
230 open claims.
The Pinnacle Actuarial Resources has also recommended that going forward, they actually provided a range of about $7.1 million to $8,166,000 as the funding requirement for the claim year that started May 1. What we're recommending be approved in terms of deposits to the claim reserves is the maximum amount of $8,166,000. We had actually budgeted about $7.3 million, but given we're in a positive position on the budget, and we think it's an opportune time to make sure that we are conservative in terms of funding the reserve fund. So. Recommendation is to fund at $8,166,000 for the current claim year and to add $2,603,328 for the prior year open claims. That has a budgetary impact for this year of about $3.15 million. Is the additional funding we would put in this year relative to what we had budgeted at the start of the year. In terms of some of the issues that we've seen with respect to why those costs, or why the actuary may have recommended an increase. The number of claims has stayed relatively constant at around 200. It kind of varies between 100 and 215 claims per year. Medical costs and settlement amounts have trended upward over time, although actually in the last few years it seems to have it bounces around, but it seems to have leveled off a little bit from what we had seen prior to 2010. Some of the issues that we're seeing are, we have a couple, actually several large claims this past year that date back as far as 2007, I believe, that came to a conclusion this year and resulted in either decisions by the commission, or in some case, I believe, by arbitrators that were against us, so to speak, adverse to our position on the claim, that resulted in cost increases and additional reserves being required for those claims. So that's.
Does Pinnacle, the actuarial resource company, do they do an annual audit? Is this an annual?
They do an annual actuarial review.
Annual actuarial review.
Yes.
Okay. And then they weren't anticipating this 2007. They weren't last year when they did a reduction.
Right.
And because the claims you said have remained constant, medical costs are trending up on the settlements. Because 2007 claim was in the works back then. I just wonder why they didn't identify that.
That's a case where we essentially lost in terms of our position with the commission, where they reserved an amount that reflected what we thought the claim would be settled at ultimately, and we received essentially an adverse decision relative to our position, and it required us to add more to the reserve.
So I'm sure everybody here knows, but maybe walk through the process that the claim goes through, just so we understand the commission coming in after an arbitrator, maybe.
It's a long process.
Right.
We have the initial claim that comes into the tollway when there's an injury or something that happens out there. We send that to our outside third-party claims administrator. They're the ones who evaluate it. They get the information. They do recorded statements. They're the company that sets up the initial reserves based on their experience of what a similar claim would be worth in the long run. We've always taken a position of being very conservative in our reserving. That we think that we always try to maintain a reserve that puts us in a position of not the worst case scenario, but a very we always say if the tollway went out of business tomorrow, but we have enough funds in the reserve for where we think the claim eventually will be. After we go through the process of going through medical evaluations, go through the process of how long the person's off, these type of things, if we have a lot of claims that end up going to the commission, people file a lot of commission, and we have a lot of legal that involves our particular claim sets. The first area that can go to is the arbitrators. These are the ones that are hired by the Workers' Comp Commission. They're the ones who take a look at the claims and try to mitigate between the tollway and the claim as far as where the claim should be. They're the ones who oversee if we think the person should be on temporary disability, if it's work-related, and these type of things. In some cases, if we do not agree with the arbitrator, then we may go to the commission, or the employee may go to the commission and ask for a trial, a hearing on the particular situation. The one case we're talking about is one where we do not agree with the doctors and everything else indicating that the condition of this particular person was totally work-related, and so bought this as far as we could and went to the commission. The commission agreed with the employee, and so we not only have to pay for medical and temporary disability, but one of the things that did change with this particular claim is under the old rules is if a person's found to be totally disabled, then we have to take care of that person. They can't come back to work. We have to take care of this person not till the end where they would retire, but forever, till the end of their life. And that's one of the changes that was made. So we not only have to do that, but we also have something new in these larger claims called Medicare set-aside. So that if there's a condition that goes into the time when the person is getting Medicare benefits, the tollway has to set aside funds so they don't collect funds from Medicare for the medical condition that was caused by that workers' comp injury. And they can get that money back, so it's not charged against Medicare. So the cost of these things have gone up over the years. And we've had, this was, as I told Mr. Kels, this is a perfect storm year. This is one where we had some people go back for medical surgeries. Their back was operated on one time, it didn't take. We have other same situation. We had a couple of trials that didn't go our way. So we're in a position where we had to set aside additional funds in anticipation. Now the funds we set aside is just anticipation. That doesn't mean we have settlements, we have actual money we're going to spend, we're going to put out. These are just claim funds that are reserved in anticipation of what's going to happen. We've done this before, as Mike has said, we've gone up and down, we've set aside the funds. And in some cases, we've been able to continue to work to try to mitigate the circumstances and lower the cost of the claims themselves.
How often do we challenge the arbitrator's decision? How often do we go to trial? And what percentage of the cases do you think?
I think our legal department, anytime we think we're right, we do.
You know what that percentage
is? No, I don't have that. That's the percentage.
You always have to be right.
But to Director Peterson's point, and I was thinking about this when I looked at the material before, it seems like such a big swing in one year, but I think part of the issue is one can't anticipate how quickly things are going to go through the system.
No.
So you don't want your money sitting there not being used, and if you've had a couple of good years, the question is, do you want to move money over in anticipation of some things that are sitting there that could go either way?
The reserving is always in a very concern. We don't want to be under-reserved for a situation we can see that might turn against us, so we have to reserve that. But it's just funds we set aside. It doesn't mean we're going to spend that. We still make sure that any funds that are spent are funds that have to be spent or should be spent.
But it's a fine line between having too much in your reserve, right, that you don't have access to for other important things.
It is.
And you know, again, as you said, you don't want to be
it's always
too little that doesn't protect you for
the trust indenture says that annually we have to look at the funding for self-insured programs and set aside an amount equal to what the actuary says we should have, and so that's what we're doing.
And commission members change, and the people who oversee the commission change. I think the governor did a big changeover a couple of years ago, and they ended up having a different pace sometimes, where picked up, and there's a lot more pressure on the hearing officers.
There was when they were going through that change and they had trained the people, and there was a delay at that point. Absolutely. Thank you.
Just one question. Because we are self-insured, is there a ceiling amount that the tolling will pay up to before the insurance policy kicks in for an additional?
At one time, we had a stop-loss insurance for this coverage. In 2004, we went out to get bids. And while we were looking for a third-party administrator, the bids came in, and then what they offered to do was give us a ceiling of $1 million, and they wanted $750,000 a year to give us $1 million ceiling on that. We've only ever had one claim that's gone over $1 million in 25 years. At that point, we made a decision not to get stop-loss insurance. For some reason, in this state, there's not a lot of carriers that want to sell stop-loss insurance to self-insurance, especially when they look at our loss experience. When we had it at a level of 350, either 300 or 350, somewhere in that range. But we just, it's not, we just can't get that. We probably would go out next year and try just to see what the market has available for us.
Do you have that in your city?
Yeah, and usually they look to see what the average claim is, and that's how they try to.
You're always right above that, what your average claim is. Yeah.
Thank you.
I will just recommend the approval of this item based on the board's consent agenda.
Okay. Do I hear any other questions? If not, there are a motion to approve.
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes, and the approval of the funding of the Workers' Comp Insurance Claim Reserve Fund now will move to the full board.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Procurement has several items.
Yes, good morning, everyone.
Hi.
We have seven items this morning. The first two I'd like to take together because they are related. As far as a little bit of background on both of these items, this is a request to procure financial statement preparation software that's utilized by our financial department to help compile our financial statements. Well, item number one for us today rescinds resolution number 19811, which was approved by the board in November of last year. The CPO's office stated that this procurement was stale since the procurement process took over a year to complete. At the time, the buyer, in addition to this procurement, had two other critical procurements that she was working on, which related to our financial advisory and bond underwriting procurements. So there was a huge emphasis on those two. And we also felt, you know, this was also an opportunity for us to change a couple of our requirements in the RFP. So we are recommended the board today to approve us to rescind this resolution. And then diving right into number two, we reissued a new RFP for these services back in July of this year. And after the evaluation process was completed, Crowe Horwath LLP was a selected vendor.
So the same vendor?
It is the same vendor that got selected on the other procurement, correct.
And it's a lower dollar amount.
It is. And the reason why we're saving some money is, you know, this was part of our change that we had in this procurement, is we removed the purchasing of some servers related to this, the software, and some of the licensing we're going to be purchasing off the state's master contract. So we are yielding some savings here. So we are, at the end of the day, this was a good move. And we're recommended that the board approve this contract to Crowe in an amount not to exceed $201,294.15 for a three-year term. So that's the first two items. Should I continue then?
I see both of them. Both proposals did not meet. There's CBIZ, and the other one was Technolab.
Yes, that's correct. Both of those firms did not meet the minimum technical points required to be considered for price.
So Crowe was the only one that we negotiated with?
Yes.
They were the only one that qualified technically?
Correct, yes.
Is that unusual?
You know, if you notice, the contract number on this is, you know, 11-0088RR, and the one that you're rescinding had only one R, which means that was a rebid. And, you know, I asked my staff, well, what happened to the original procurement? We didn't get any bids on that one at all. So maybe, you know, something that we could look in the future is maybe call some of these other firms up and ask them, why didn't they participate? I know the notice went out to several of these firms.
The notice goes out to everybody who's registered on
under that given class code.
Under that class code. So certainly there was an automated notice that goes out just as part
correct.
Of the
vendors would need to receive right. an email notification, yes.
Yeah, I would think the sooner the better, don't you, to ask other firms why they didn't bid? And maybe I heard the word places.
We certainly can. I guess the question is there was an automatic notice that was generated through the procurement system. Mm-hmm. If they're registered under this class, they knew about the opportunity. So we can certainly ask them, yeah, but it wasn't because people weren't informed.
Yeah, no, I'm not concerned about whether they were informed. I'm concerned just not on this particular contract, but any time we send out to a whole bunch of people and we only get one qualified response suggests
there's something
wrong. Not
sure.
wrong, but unusual. right? Because when we see many, 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 many contracts, then we usually get people who will bid.
And generally, our policy is if we receive less than three bids on any contract, we will do some outreach with the vendors that we expect a proposal from and say, hey, how can we submit a proposal on this? And I'm sure that was done. I could definitely look into that.
Okay, thank you.
Now, is this because the ERP system that we currently have won't provide those financial statements on this, and are we then exporting data into our new software system?
A supplement to our general ledger to help us prepare the financial statements in a more efficient and accurate fashion as we move toward the new ERP. It's helping us bridge the time that we're going to have between now and when an ERP is functional.
So the software then is Pearl Harwat software that they designed that software?
It's actually Microsoft AX software. So it's Microsoft AX. It's formerly known as Microsoft Dynamics.
And they're the implementer?
Crow is an implementer, yes.
Is that an accurate way to describe their role?
Yes.
So they're doing software implementation?
Yes. Correct.
Oh, yes. It seemed like there would be more companies that should be able to do that kind of work. And I would like to look into that, too.
Okay. Exactly. I can have that information by full board.
Why the significant savings? Why such like over 67,000 significant savings?
It wasn't that much in actual savings. What happened was we actually increased the number of licenses that we requested, because originally I think we had 30 licenses that we requested, and then we bumped it up to 50 in the rebid. But we also concurrently removed some hardware, I think was the purchase of two servers, and also some Microsoft licensing. So it wasn't 65,000 in actual savings, even though it may look that way. It was a lot less than that.
So things that we removed from
correct.
The yes. really are driving the lower costs.
Correct.
Which we may not have ended up purchasing under the original contract. Anyway, correct. We didn't have to purchase them.
Correct.
So I don't think we want to represent necessarily that we're saving a lot of money. In fact, I think one of our points that we made when we were told that we should rebid this because it had taken a long time to get to this point was, you know, we hadn't gotten any bidders the first time we went out. We didn't get a lot of bidders the second time. And you know, to go through another multi-month procurement process instead of just executing the contract, we weren't sure that that was the best use of everyone's time, but they wanted us to go back out, and obviously we did, and I think we got one different bidder, although they didn't meet the qualifications, but the original bidder that didn't meet the qualifications didn't bid again, so, you know.
I think, John, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the bidding price kind of for bidding items was very similar to the last.
It was.
So it really is a matter of
how many things were in, right. How many things versus an actual lower price.
Yeah. I mean, again, we are realizing a little bit of savings because we're purchasing some of these items off a master contract, but it's by no means a $65,000 difference.
But we'll look into this, because the other thing that we had directed procurement to do was to, you know, on these procurements, reach out also to our list and assist agencies and everybody else, you know, on as many procurements as possible, so that in addition to the CMS list where people were self-registered, there would be others too that, you know, might be able to compete for these. So we'll take a look and get back to you on all the outreach that was done and the feedback that we get about why people didn't decide to submit for this.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, go ahead. Okay. So number three, I think everyone is familiar with number three, and we'll be using it in the near future. This is our annual requirements for rock salt for the whole 2013 winter season. So CMS issued a competitive procurement for rock salt that included the tollway, IDOT, local governments, and municipalities. This is the first time in several years that one solicitation has covered both IDOT and the tollway. Usually in the year that we're doing a bid, they're doing their renewal and vice versa. You know, and we were always for this, is that, you know, we had to get either ourselves or the IDOT to give in and go in the bid together. And I guess for some reason, IDOT had a problem with their renewal, so they elected to rebid this year. And we know we got a good price of it. So the average price per ton out of this bid is $53.84 per ton. And this represents approximately a 10% decrease from the previous year.
Is that because of surplus?
Yeah, Paul, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure our domes are pretty much full.
We're in good shape, I think. I know that we evaluate that with respect to what we think a 10-year needs are, a 10-year average is for that, so we try to stay at that volume, so whatever we're purchasing what we need to stay at that. And also, I think this contract requires us to commit to at least 80% of it. So we only commit to the 80% mark, and we have the ability to go up to 120% if we actually find that as we get into the winter, you know, we need more. But
In the dollar amount before you today is the 120% mark, which
is the
max
that we're allowed. Yeah, one. Okay.
It's the max that we're allowed to purchase under the contract if we need to.
So, and I know the BEP says TBD. Can we talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, actually, there was a CMS did place a 7% BEP goal, you know, which is being committed by all the vendors to the distribution of salt. So they're subcontracting the BEP firms to transport the salt to all the various locations. So there's a 7% goal that is being committed or achieved. So award is recommended of this procurement to Cargill Salt, Detroit Salt Company Incorporated, North American Salt Company, and Morton Salt Incorporated in a total amount not to exceed $3,835,390.80. Okay. So similar to the first two items number four and five, I'd like to take those two together as they're both fuel-related procurements.
Were there any other questions on this call?
Okay. So I'm taking items number four and five together as they're both fuel. And just as a little bit of background for you, in 2011, CMS executed four fuel contracts that cover our whole system for a two-year term. Well, now that it's 2 years forward in 2013, two of the four vendors opted not to renew their contracts. So CMS conducted another fuel procurement to make sure those locations have coverage for the additional year. So respondents, they bid their margin, which is their profit and delivery, per gallon, and this price is then added to the rack price per gallon the day the fuel is delivered. This contract, item number four, it represents a one-year term, and the contract will expire in October 11th of 2014. So again, the price for fuel, you know, the way how that's calculated is the day that the fuel is delivered, we look at the rack prices that are available. So that rack price that is published the day that the fuel is delivered, we then add the vendor's margin and all the applicable taxes that we may have to pay. The state, the way they do the procurement is their price fluctuates. Their rack price only fluctuates once a week. Every Monday, a new rack price of fuel comes out. And what happens is, you know, we receive better prices on the distribution of it because there's less risk for these firms. So we're happy with the way that we procure this. And item number four, award is recommended to Christian County Farmer Supply Company, Conserve FS, and Cooper Oil Company in a total amount not to exceed $3,663,034.50.
Why did two of the four previously awarded vendors elect not to renew? Did you say that?
You know, one of them I think was related to a federal subsidy that they had on the ethanol, because that expired. I think it was in early 12. I can't recall the exact date. So essentially that they were making a lot less profit than they had originally had intended. They didn't think that the government was going to go away with that subsidy, but they did. That was the main vendor, though.
Was this always CMS for tollway?
It is.
The previous, that where the vendors decided not to renew, was CMS for tollway, or was it CMS master?
CMS for the tollway. The CMS also has a separate contract for the rest of the state agencies. We're a little bit different because of our geographic.
Yeah.
Okay. So then, again, jumping into number five, that is the renewal of our fuel contracts for the two vendors that opted to renew their contracts for the additional year, and these will expire also on October 11th of 2014. Award of the renewal is recommended to Conserve FS and Christian County Farmer Supply Company in a total amount not to exceed $2,565,268. And one thing to note, you know, is that since both of these sets of contracts expire in October of next year, CMS is going to put out another bid for us next year that would encompass one set of contracts. So we're not on two different schedules. Okay? So we're recommending approval for those firms for both the new procurement and the renewal. Any questions, or should I dive in number five? Or number six, rather than five? We're diving into it. Okay. We'll drive right into the number six, which is mid-sized plug-in hybrid sedans. So this item is an award of a tollway-led IFB to purchase two plug-in hybrid sedans. The